Well, you've probably been seeing a lot of things about these red flag laws. Colorado just passed one, and they seem to just open up the floodgates to confiscation of your right of your arms and violation of your Second Amendment rights. Well, with us is our good friend John Lott, Jr., president of Crime Prevention Research Center and the foremost authority on gun laws and the effect of guns on society, the benefits of guns. John, it's great to have you back on the show. So Colorado just passes this red flag law. Just briefly summarize for us, what is a red flag law and why should we be worried?
Well, people probably may remember the old Tom Cruise movie Minority Report, where they try, they have a division of future crimes to predict whether or not somebody is going to go and kill somebody. And this is kind of the modern day equivalent of future crimes. They don't have psychics in order to try to predict whether somebody's going to commit a crime. In this case, they rely on friends or neighbors or acquaintances. In Colorado's case, basically anybody can call in to the police and raise a concern that they think that the person is either a danger to themselves or to somebody else. And based on that, then there'll be a judge involved. And if they meet what's called a reasonableness standard, which is saying the judge has slightly more than a hunch based upon that complaint, there's no hearing initially, just the judge will see the complaint that's been filed. He doesn't question the person who's entered the complaint. He just reads the complaint that's been filed there. He can then go and sign an order taking away the person's guns, and that will be done for, depending upon the state, any place from 2 weeks to 30 days. And then at that point, there can be a hearing for taking away the person's guns for a longer period of time. And you have a hearing where there'll be a higher standard of evidence, where they'll have to usually have a preponderance of evidence, but in some cases it's still just probable cause, which is maybe about a 25% or so probability that the person is a danger to themselves or somebody else, to take away the guns for longer periods of time.
Yeah, it sounds kind of egregious. You have no probable cause, nothing. You're just doing this on rumor. I mean, how do they justify this, John?
Well, they justify it because they say the person might be a danger to themselves or somebody else. And in order to try to be safe, they're saying that, you know, you need to take away the person's guns that are there. My own guess is that there's at least a reasonable chance that if this ever gets to the Supreme Court one of these days, then they'll strike it down, saying that you can't take away somebody's rights to self-defense with such low standards of evidence, and that you don't have a hearing before you take away somebody's guns, that they lose the right to self-defense simply because somebody else goes and raises a complaint.
Yeah.
You know, in Colorado, you know, it doesn't have to be somebody in the state. It can be somebody outside the state. They just have to call in. And as I said, it can be anybody. It doesn't even have to be somebody who even knows you well. So you have a lot of real concerns about due process. My concerns go past due process in terms of whether or not, you know, the standards of evidence that you have and other things in order to take away somebody's gun. And we have done research at the Crime Prevention Research Center looking at the impact this has on everything from suicide rates to deaths from mass shootings to different types of crimes. And we find no impact on suicide rates or on deaths from mass public shooting the only crime rate that we find any type of systematic effect is in terms of rape, and that actually shows a small increase in rape rates. You know, here's one of the problems that people ignore, and that is if you were to talk to, let's say, a liberal and say, well, you know, there's some danger for people for AIDS that they'll go and spread it. And so you have, and some people have actually spread it on purpose. What you need to do is quarantine people. They would understandably say, you can't go and do that because if you impose penalties on somebody like that, then they'll be reticent to go and seek help, to go and get tested. But they don't seem to understand that that can apply to other areas, such as gun control. And, you know, so let's say you're someone who is depressed. Let's say you're a police officer who's not feeling 100%. You may now be reticent to go and talk to family members or others about it, or other people that you know, simply because if you do that, then somebody could call in and put in a complaint, and you'd have your gun taken away, and you'd not be able to work and have your career messed up. And, you know, and if that's the case, if somebody won't even go and talk to others because they're afraid that a complaint might be filed, then the person wouldn't go and get the type of help or even be able to talk to others about the problems that could be important to them.
Yeah, I can see the point there. And what about when they do these no-knock raids to go grab the person's guns? They don't even identify that they're the police, and then people get killed when they're trying to basically take someone's guns away wrongfully.
Right. Well,
it's happened.
You've had one person killed in Maryland recently. You know, there's a large number of people who end up getting affected by these laws. In Florida, they passed the law in March. It was in effect for about 9 months last year. There were over 1,000 gun confiscations that occurred. You had Maryland, didn't go into effect until October last year. You had 300 gun confiscations that had occurred within just 3 months. And the thing is, the longer these laws are in effect, you see bigger increases in the rates that guns are taken away from people. So, I mean, I think you have some real impacts on a large number of people. And you have, one of the claims is that you can't have these, hearings before you go and take away somebody's guns, because if somebody is a danger to themselves or others, it might trigger them doing something. But, you know, every state has had laws that allow you to go and do anything from taking away somebody's weapons to involuntarily committing them. And you've been able to have emergency hearings of taking somebody in right away. They've had higher standards, and when they have emergency hearings, they can be done the same day. You know, you have 72-hour holds that can be put on somebody for evaluation. You know, experts, mental health care experts would be involved. But under the new standards, they actually have situations where, you know, in fact, you look at all these laws, they no longer require mental health experts involved in the evaluation of people.
Yeah, it's something really wrong here. And it's really showing us, like, due process is really out the window. It's just at a judge's whim, and it's on rumor. And like you said, the mechanisms have already been in place. If this person's such a threat, imminent threat to themselves and to others, they can be committed easily. In Florida, there's the Baker Act, two doctors and a judge, and that's it. So why have we dispensed with the need for due process in this one area? Is it just that these are gun grabbers and they really, their ultimate goal is to ban all guns? Is that really what it's about here, John?
Right. I mean, you bring up the Baker Act, and that's an excellent example of states already having laws that deal with this. You know, and people point to the Parkland shooting last year and just saying this is why we need to have these red flag laws. It's the type of thing that's usually used to justify them. But Florida already had the Baker Act. You already, you know, you just had a reasonableness standard to be able to go and have the person for a 72-hour hold. But despite having this low reasonableness standard that's there, we've already mentioned, which is slightly more than a hunch, there was no decision to go and use it there. Yet somehow, and they say, well, you know, we need to have the red flag law to take away the guns. You know, there are multiple issues here. Even if you think somehow the judge would behave differently with the red flag law than they did with the same standard for the Baker Act. And that is, if you really believe that somebody's a danger to themselves or others, and that's the term that's often used in these discussions when these laws get passed, you know, if the person's really a danger, if you really believe the person's a danger, then simply saying that they can't legally own a gun doesn't seem to me very serious. I mean, if you're talking about suicide, there's so many different ways for somebody to go and commit suicide. Just to go and take away their guns just doesn't seem like it's serious. We really believe that somebody is a danger to others, that they may engage in some type of attack, just to say that they legally can't own a gun. I mean, there's so many other ways for people to obtain a gun. You know, the major providers of guns in the United States are illegal guns are drug gangs. I mean, these drug gangs or drug dealers have guns simply to go and protect their very valuable property that they have. And, you know, the notion that it's going to be any easier to stop people from getting a hold of guns than getting a hold of illegal drugs just isn't serious. So, anyway, it's...
yeah, there's something wrong here. And when we go back to Parkland, which was the raison d'etre for all of these ridiculous red flag laws, the fact is it had nothing to do with the laws on the books. It had to do with this promise program that was unilaterally implemented by the Holder Justice Department to reduce the number of minority suspensions, which was somehow going to lead to a safer school environment. This guy was constantly in trouble with the law and school authorities, and he was never prosecuted, so his name never went on a list, so he was able to freely purchase weapons. And not to mention, the FBI was warned twice about him. The local authorities were warned many times. And finally, when Florida got a new governor in, DeSantis, he immediately, the first day on the job, he kicked out Broward County Sheriff, the Broward County Sheriff, Scott Israel. I mean, that was the reason. So, you know, to use that as the reason for these red flag laws really is just devious.
No, I mean, you know, here's the problem. We go and enact certain rules or regulations that cause problems. You mentioned some of the regulations that the Obama administration put in effect that discouraged actually dealing with people because you didn't want young minorities to go and have a record of some type. So it makes it so this person isn't dealt with the existing rules and laws that are there. Well, if you have the same types of biases, the same type of regulations, if, you know, let's say Hillary Clinton had won and they haven't tried to reform those types of rules that were there, you know, why do you think it would be any different with the red flag law if they don't want the person to be able to go and have a record? Why would people? I mean, because you had a reasonableness standard with the Baker Act, as you said, that could have been there, but they were discouraged from going and implementing the Baker Act. But rather than going and saying, well, maybe our regulations that we had before create a problem and that we should deal with those, the response is, well, we need even more regulations that are there. You know, I look at things like these gun-free zones that they had at schools there. And, you know, it seems hard for me to understand why people don't realize the dangers that those have, that these killers try to place pick places for attacks where they know victims can't defend themselves. You know, if you have a readily identifiable guard, who let's say is in uniform, they have a very difficult job, even if they do it, which obviously the guard in Florida didn't really do it. You know, you have real problems that are there because somebody who's in uniform, if he's, you know, if you have a killer there, somebody's going to engage in a terrorist type of attack. They know if they take out the guard first, then they'll be, you know, they'll have free rein to go and kill other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so those will be the first guys they take out. And, you know, having one person there by themselves to go and guard a place is, you know, almost an impossible task that you're asking them to do.
Yeah, and then let's not forget that a lot of times the police send the least effective or the most troublesome employees to guard these schools because they view it as a very easy job where nothing is likely to happen. And
well, they also view it as a boring job.
Yeah,
I mean,
get rid of
them. When people don't appreciate, you know, you look at something like air marshals. Within 6 months, there's over a 50% turnover rate in terms of people leaving the job. You think, well, it's fun flying back and forth across the Atlantic. The thing is, you know, you can't go to sleep. You can't read a book or watch a movie. You just have to sit there for right. 6 hours or whatever as you fly back and forth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how many times are there attacks on planes?
Yeah. And, you know, there's no sign that they've been effective in the least. I don't even know how many are still flying. They got rid of them 30 years ago for that very same reason, right? 40 years ago, that they really didn't do any good.
Well, I mean, it's just, look, if you're going to have somebody guard a place, you know, you're going to want to have two people there. I mean, there's a reason why you put two officer and units together when you're around a capital or something like that. Because if you're going to have an attack, you know, somebody shoots the officer from behind or what have you.
Yeah.
At least it gives the other officer some chance to go and respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. Very, very true. And, you know, so what's Florida done effectively to stop the incidents besides the red flag law, which probably is going to get struck down at some point? What else have they really done to make this effective?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the problem. I mean, they are now talking about an armed teachers program, you know, and they have a few rural schools that have it now. But the reason why you have somebody like that is to take away the strategic advantages that these killers have. You know, in Florida, they have about 1.7 million people, residents who have concealed carry permits. They've given out about 1.9, almost 2 million permits now, generally. You know, you go to a mall, you go to a restaurant, you go to a movie theater. The probability that somebody near you is going to have a permanent concealed handgun is extremely high. You don't notice it. You don't know who's carrying or not.
Right.
There's no reason for you to believe you're going to know anymore when you're talking about teachers being able to carry. And we have 20 states now that to varying degrees allow teachers to carry. You know, in places like Utah and New Hampshire, anybody who has a concealed carry permit is carrying. In other states like Texas and Oklahoma in Ohio, you have over 300 school districts that have teachers caring. There have been no real problems at all. Some of these states have had these laws for over two decades. You know, the claims that, well, you know, a teacher will lose control of the gun and a student will go and use it. There's not one case like that that's occurred. You know, so often in these gun control debates, you have things about what might possibly go wrong without actually providing evidence and data on it. And that's true in this case as in so many other instances.
Hey, just one other thing, John, I want to cover is there's actually a case, a Second Amendment case that came from the Second Circuit, which has been anti-Second Amendment since I can remember. Basically, they don't believe that the right to keep and bear arms exists for individuals. It's on its way to the Supreme Court. Is that cause for optimism?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's New York City has kind of a bizarre law that says you have to have a license to own a gun. And that license has certain restrictions. And so one of the restrictions are is that once you buy the gun and take it home, you're not allowed to transport it to another residence or to leave, take it out of state or to take it upstate New York or to transport it anyplace. You won't accept for the seven indoor firing ranges that they have in New York City. And in order to take it there, it has to be unloaded and in a locked box.
Right.
But, you know, the notion that you can't even move your gun from one residence to another is bizarre, I think. And I think there's a high probability that the Supreme Court will strike this down. You know, it's just one little chink in the armor of gun control people. You know, you're going to have a lot more cases after this. But I think there's a good chance that this will be struck down.
Yeah, New York City also, you have a New York State licensing law, and then you have a New York City licensing law. So if you've got the right to carry in Westchester County, you have to go and apply to New York City for a permit as well, for a concealed carry permit in New York City. It's the craziest thing, and nobody gets them. But we do know some secret ways of forcing the police department, who is in charge of licensing, by the way. So that's also completely inefficient. And they were just caught in a scandal where they were basically selling licenses through Comrade de Blasio's political connections. They were giving away or selling carry permits, you know, all these things. And, you know, in some counties in New York, you can just go and you can literally just go to the sheriff and within days you'll get it. And then in others, you'll never get it. So it's ripe for it. Same with New Jersey, Connecticut to a lesser extent, but definitely they're all due for their judicial review because most of them are certainly unconstitutional.
Well, it's going to be a long process. Only thing I can say is that you probably need to pick up one more seat on the Supreme Court to be sure about this type of stuff. And because it's Roberts is not a dependable vote.
Not at all.
Types of issues. And so it's going to take another election to get by. To be able to go and deal with these types of issues.
For sure. For sure. No question about it. Well, hey, really appreciate your coming on the show here. And we will definitely talk to you again. John, where's the best place to find your work and to find all of your organization's work as well?
Right. Well, people can go to crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. And, you know, they'll see all of our research and everything up there.
All right. Hey, any questions or comments, just write us, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, listening to this on a podcast or watching on YouTube, then please subscribe, like, and share. It really helps us a lot when you do it. Helps get ideas out there like John's, and it really makes all the difference. John?